Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Tuesday edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
Not bad, not bad. Not great, but I'm hanging in there.
I gotta say, I was watching the Wolves and the Warriors last night, which was like not an amazing game.
No.
Although some amazing things happened, the Steph Curry spit take, I feel like, is something that I may be seeing for years and years and years.
He was pretty awesome last night.
He was also pretty awesome.
Yeah, Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins were pretty good too, but overall it was not a well-played basketball game.
No, the Timberwolves are very bad.
Yep.
But I was watching this game, and it's kind of blowout in the fourth quarter, and I look up, and, you know, the electronic video boards around the arena are all blaring these Damon Ratto and Kolsky signs. And I got a little bit of like, I know that guy.
Yep, that's
hey,
me.
I know that guy.
You weren't the only so one.
I texted you.
Texts.
And you were so nonplussed. You're like, yeah.
No, I mean, I'm aware of it. It's cool. It is very cool. But you know, I guess maybe I'm just jaded and old and, you know,
these are not new signs.
No, they're right? Not new signs. Them.
Yeah. So for you, it's just old news.
Right. Well, we've been the flagship station for a few seasons and I have been on the afternoon show for at least a couple of those. So that pops up courtside.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I think when you work in radio, this is a little inside baseball, but yeah, everyone wants their name on a billboard or their, you know, my buddy got his face on a billboard a couple of years ago.
That's intense.
But yeah, you know, as the radio industry shrinks, there's just less and less, you know, paid advertising places. So
yep. Well, this is a trade out, so don't get too carried away.
That's right. That's right.
So. Nobody paid money for my name to be anywhere, so let's just not.
Fair enough.
Let's not freak out.
Yeah, platinum plaques. Those are all I've got to brag.
Hey, man, those are pretty good.
Yeah. all right, let's get to the show. We have a fairly light slate today. Where would you like to start?
You want to start with Small Axe? Because I think after this episode, we both need a break from Small Axe for a while.
Yeah. And I'm not actually, you know, and I think that actually rolls a little bit well maybe into White Tiger as well, which we'll talk about in a second. Alex Wheatley? Weedle?
Weedle?
What's the name of
Weedle,
it?
Weedle, I
Weets.
Believe.
Weets.
Weets. They call him Weets.
Was the name of this episode. And I don't want to sound like a broken record because I did think it was pretty good. It was one of those where like the postcard drops and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I get it. But also just
here's the thing.
This is the fourth episode we've spent of just watching people get treated really badly.
It's a bummer.
It's always
and,
fun.
And, yeah. And here's the thing. I just wonder if, here's the thing. The first two were kind of different, right? Like the first, the Mangrove, the first film in the series, really told the story of one restaurant's importance to the sort of black, for lack of a better term, Black Lives Matter extended movement in Britain, right? Like it told a story. Then the second episode was very
narrow.
It was a vibe, right? We talked about this.
Right.
It was a mood. And I think we both liked the mood very much.
Yes, these, well, and it was the most fun, I think, of these
yes.
episodes.
Yeah. Although still dark. But these three and four, these last two, have both been just sort of very truncated feeling stories that I don't know exactly what the goal is, but to force the viewer to sit in the miserable treatment of West Indian immigrants in London over the course of the last century. You know, like, I don't know what else there is from it, really, because you don't get the full story of these people. They're not developed that deeply. not that they're bad characters or bad performances or anything like that, but you don't get a lot. You mostly what you get is the horrifying treatment. And I understand the value of being like, look at this. Now sit in it and look at it. But at a certain point, I start to wonder if this all couldn't have just been accomplished in one normal length film that told more of a complete story.
You do wonder about that, particularly when I feel like the last couple have ended kind of abruptly.
Exactly. With the last two, the last two in particular, because they both feel not just the abrupt ending, but the fact that they don't feel like they tell a complete story of anything exactly.
Yeah. And there are some themes. I mean, I think the power of reading
absolutely
was a big part of this one.
Absolutely.
Sure. And then there's a music theme that I think is really kind of run through almost all of them.
Yep.
At this point, maybe not Mangrove, I guess. But even Mangrove had a little bit of.
Mangrove had that incredible like street jam scene, right?
Right. Like exactly, yeah.
Certainly, so. Each episode of Small Axe has made a point of saying how important music is to this culture.
Yeah. And Wheats, you know, really, I think, found himself a lot, you know, in that record store.
Yeah.
You know, and with the Crucial Rockers.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess you could make the same argument that he found a lot in drug dealing, too. I don't know. So, it's still well put together.
It's all quite good.
But I'm with you.
But it's just tough.
I don't quite know. Yeah. What we're trying to do here entirely, and it can be a tough hang.
I saw a debate. I can't even remember what it was surrounding on Twitter this week about, like, why does a movie have to do anything, right? Like, why does it have to teach us something? And that's fair enough, but these movies clearly come from a place of teaching, right? Like, they're very obviously intended to make points and social statements clearly. So,
yeah, I don't think I'm with you. I don't think a movie has to do, and we've liked some movies that don't
totally
do much that are just fun.
Exactly, but that's not what this is. So
right.
We have to ask those questions, I think, about what you know, what is the point, and is it a worthy point, or is it a point that's served by another three episodes or whatever? Because that's what they're doing. That's what Steve McQueen is doing here. He's
yeah,
yeah.
I don't think it's a good sign when we're four, I'll call them episodes, into a five episode series, and we're sort of like, I don't totally know why all of these existed, and I don't know why we're going to do one more. You know what I mean? Because I don't, they're five separate films in a way, but they're also not, you know, like they're also definitely kind of connected. So,
I am interested in, like, I do want to see the last one. It's called Education, and it is, you know, by what little I've read about it, while still dark and tough, is a little more hopeful for the future. And you can imagine what the basic idea is. It's called Education. We'll see. This is just something that, like, it's, you know, we call what we do each week homework, and most of the time it doesn't feel like it, but this is homework.
Yep. I agree. It's this is the vegetable portion of your plate. You
yeah, and it's what the vegetables are well prepared and tasty to a degree, but at the end of the day, they're vegetables, and most of what we do is candy.
Exactly. Exactly. So the reason I wanted to bring up White Tiger is because a similarly dark story about suffocating, inescapable poverty, right?
Yeah. Or not inescapable, where, as it were.
Right. It's the one person who of a, literally a billion that gets out of it. But
yeah, I mean, in a way, now the story, the plot is very dark too, but in a way, the like unplotted implications of this film are the darkest part of it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. But I also found like this was not nearly as tough a hang. And I'm not 100% sure why that is. Maybe it's a little bit more of the very Danny Boyle-esque sort of razzle-dazzle kind of the direction.
You know what I was going to compare the direction to?
Narration.
You know what? I was going to compare it to the Safdie brothers.
Oh, interesting.
Because, and I didn't love Uncut Gems, but, you know, I agreed with everyone in the world that it set a frantic mood and tone that was palpable, right? And I think that's what distinguishes the brutality and difficulty of a movie like White Tiger from the brutality and difficulty of the Small Axe series. Is in White Tiger, you are on the edge of your seat gripping the chair with both hands. And in Small Axe, you're like sitting back with your legs crossed and your hand on your chin, like, you know?
Yeah, I do know. And I, you know, I mean, I think that's especially true. You know, the movie sort of takes a turn for the dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of that middle section where you're right. Sort of like, oh,
it's a
2-hour
movie,
go, you know?
Yeah. It's a 2-hour movie. And the first 45 minutes is really very much set up.
Yeah. Necessary setup though.
Totally.
You know, I didn't feel like it's a long movie, but I didn't feel like it was too long.
Nope. No, I and
really at any point,
honestly, the biggest thing, like when this movie ended, and really a number of times throughout this movie, it was just one of those things where I kept having the feeling of like, man, this is just a really good movie. Like, good acting, good writing, clever plot devices, just like everything was really smart and well done. And, you know, even though I don't think it tries to hide where it's going exactly, but it still keeps you on the edge of your seat pretty much throughout, certainly for the last hour plus. So this isn't like a movie that is so mind-blowingly original or oh my God, I never saw this coming, or how did they possibly make this work? It's just a really good movie.
It literally tells you where it's going in the first scene, essentially, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't totally tell you, but yeah, that's what I mean. Is it like, there's no like, oh my God moment exactly. It's just really good all the way through.
Yeah. Were you like me and did you just kind of assume that he didn't do it when they're showing the
wanted,
the flyer of him being wanted for murder?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I thought too specifically about it, but I definitely imagined, not that his life wasn't hard, but I definitely imagined him getting screwed over more. Like, I kind of thought the story was going to turn when they were potentially going to frame him for murder.
Yes.
And then
definitely thought he was going to prison.
Right. Like, I thought, yeah. I mean, in a way, I guess I did think it wasn't true. Although, it wasn't so much that as I thought, like, I definitely thought he was going to get more of the short end of the stick. And again, that's not to minimize the fact that, you know, he was born into the short end of the stick in a number of ways. But just like, I thought there would be more direct screwing over. And really, in terms of direct screwing over, he did most of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's weird. He kind of gets red pilled. You know what I mean? Figures out there's a cage that he's in, and then sets about his work. And it's, yeah, it's just a really fascinating 2 hours. I think this was the one that, of the, you know, the movies that we watched this week or the stuff that we watched this week where I was kind of just like, I don't know, you know, I watched it last.
Yeah.
And
me too.
I turned out to be delighted by it. Yeah. So,
yeah, it may even have been the
job.
Thing Ed I liked the most.
Go ahead.
I was just saying it may Joshua even
have been. Priyanka Chopra Jonas.
Yeah, very good. Very good, and my suspicion is this movie doesn't get made without her participation.
Yeah, she had a big producer credit in the front, so I'm assuming.
Big
that
producer
she,
credit, and she's really, yeah, really the only known actor in the thing, so. Yeah, and she's very good.
Yeah, she's very good, and I thought her role was interesting. I did not, you know, obviously we're long past spoiling it, but I didn't expect her to disappear kind of two-thirds of the way through the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really is an interesting story. It just in a really, really well-done film, and it looks great, too. I mean, it's some incredible shots of all different parts of India and shot in really thoughtful ways, I think. So I would strongly recommend White Tiger.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll never know, but I'm quite curious to see how many people wind up watching this on Netflix.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's getting a big push from them. But I always find what people watch on Netflix to be interesting sometimes.
Who the hell knows what people are watching for sure. It's confusing.
You see these like top tens and stuff and it gets you there. Okay, so that brings us to Lockdown. Which is the Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor? Did I get that right?
Close enough.
Say it right.
I think it's Ejiofor.
Ejiofor? Okay.
I believe so.
And many others. There's a wide range of famous people who pop in and out of this movie.
Yes. Mostly on Zoom.
This was, mostly on Zoom. You know, obviously this was sort of created for Lockdown. And it is the rare domestic drama / heist film.
Yeah.
And it has been pretty polarizing, I would say. So... I'm very curious as to where you landed on it.
I am surprised that it is polarizing because I just don't think it's that big a deal. Like, I enjoyed it. It wasn't great, but for what it was, I thought it was perfectly good. Like, just a little bit.
What would you say that it was?
Like a cute little
what do you say for what it was?
It's a weird little caper built around these crazy times that we're living in. That's what I would say it was.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Okay,
it's weird.
Fair.
It's weird, and there's not much to it. I guess you hated it, huh?
Hated is a little strong. Well, as we were watching it, there was definitely a point where I was mad at you for suggesting it. And then, but like, as I have faded from it a little bit, you know what I mean? It was the first thing I watched. It's probably been a week since I've seen it. That's kind of gone away, and I'm just sort of left with I thought it was just kind of unsuccessful. That's kind of where I would land. So I don't think hate is the right word for me. It is definitely weird, and I think
it's weird.
The domestic parts of it don't work great because it's so weird.
So look, this
relationship
thing,
is so weird.
Yeah, this thing is not. It's not a play. But it kind of does feel like it sometimes. Because it's just these two actors.
It does.
They're just like at home stretching out and doing stuff. And it's weird stuff for the most part. And it's clearly intended to suggest that they are at the absolute edge of sanity after being locked down together for however long, right? Like, this movie is two people at the edge of sanity doing a crazy thing together that somehow makes them feel bad.
But this is that's sort of part of it, though, is like that I think that if this was just two people who had gone crazy because of the situation, to me, I think that might be a more compelling thing. What I feel like this is so deeply weird, deeply mismatched people who are then going crazy on top of the deeply weirdness and mismatchedness about them. You know what I mean? Like, their relationship's terrible. Like, she was hiding him to her like colleagues for 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I don't know why they're revisiting the relationship. But yeah, look, it's weird. It's definitely weird. I don't have an answer for that. And again, I'm not going to tell anybody that this was like great. But as you enter your, 50th week of lockdown, dear listener, maybe you can sort of enjoy this. That's how I felt about it.
That's the thing. And we're like that, because I feel like that's the other thing. It's like, I'm definitely going insane. I was here to watch a movie about people going insane.
Maybe that is why fundamentally this is polarizing, is because much as we may not be thinking about it and we may hate to admit it, just the concept of being locked in a house with someone right now is triggering for a lot of people.
That might be it. Didn't you like? I mean, the heist part of it, I didn't think was any particular great shakes either.
No, it's not Ocean's 11, but it's like they had five actors and a bunch of people on Zoom. I thought it was pretty well done. You know what I mean?
And the heist, there was a full crew there for the heist.
Okay, right? 10 actors.
Right? When they get to Herod's. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
it was still very and like, I as weird as they were, I enjoyed the scenes with like Ben Stiller and Ben Kingsley. Like, they were silly and dumb, but funny. I don't know. Again, this is a very, it's funny to me that this is so polarizing, because it's a very middle of the road movie to me.
Yeah, I don't, it's weird. I'm like, I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying.
Right.
I just liked it a lot less than you did, I think.
Fair enough.
And it's not without charms. I agree. It has some moments. Like, Dulé Hill and whoever was playing his wife, like, those moments were great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's her name is Jasmine Simon, but you've seen her in
I've definitely seen her, yeah.
Yeah, she is in Psych semi-frequently. She's
okay, they have a history together, those two.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
Right.
Dulé Hill's inside,
right?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that part of it. Maybe not frequently, but she's in it a couple times, and I think she actually plays like a crazy. Maybe it's his sister. I can't remember. But she was also on Ballers. Like all of Ballers.
Oh yeah, okay, that sounds about right.
She's what's his face's wife, the big guy's wife.
She was. Yeah, the big guys. Okay.
Yep.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
Anyway, there were a lot of, some of the cameos were fun. But it's also like, it's a lot of movie, right? It's like, it's a lot of movie. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's about normal
length
these days.
I think that Hathaway, I think Hathaway and Chiwetel, they're terrific actors.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe I was just expecting a little more.
Maybe.
And to me, it's down to writing. The writing of this, I didn't love.
I do think that's the easiest thing to criticize.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that's all I got on lockdown. You got any more on that?
No, I feel good about it. I kind of think we've already given it more than it necessarily demands.
It probably deserves.
Yeah, again, and I kind of liked it, but like there's not much to it. It's nothing, you know, groundbreaking or earth-shattering in any way. And it's very weird.
Yeah.
But I do like weird. I mean, that's my thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe I need a certain brand of weird. I can get into weird.
Yeah.
But this wasn't my weird. I don't think.
All right, so should we talk a little football before we go?
Yeah. I can't, like, the one takeaway for me from those two games last weekend was the unbelievable chicken shit nature of the head coaching for both of the losing teams.
Terrible. Did you have picks in any official capacity? Or bets or anything?
Did I have picks? I did, and neither of those bets. I was on the Packers and the Bills plus 10. So yeah. Neither of those panned out, as it were.
I
like the Packers and Chiefs to win the game, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh. I liked the Packers, and I thought Buffalo might win the game, but I also thought Patrick Mahomes would be limited in some clear and obvious way, which certainly turned out not to be the case. Or if that's him limited, holy God, it's terrifying. That said, literally 1 week after I picked the Buccaneers and said, I will not let Tom Brady hurt me again, it didn't even occur to me that the Bucs might beat the Packers in Lambeau until like 5 minutes before kickoff, when I was like, did I just do something really stupid? And yes, I did. I did something really stupid. Because whatever magic horseshoe fairy dust bullshit is shoved up Tom Brady's ass is... I mean, I guess it's not undefeated, but it is powerful juju, man. It really is. Like, I just...
It is. He wasn't that good in this game, right?
He was not very good. Particularly in the second half, he was pretty awful. Aaron Rodgers was pretty good, but under assault all day. One of the weird things here for me is, like, all year, the Packers' offensive line was really good, except... Week 6 when the Buccaneers tore him up, and this weekend when the Buccaneers tore him up. I don't know how to explain that, because the Buccaneers the rest of the time were good, but not great. Like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's a styles make fight kind of thing.
It must be, right? It's obviously, it's beyond my comprehension. But it must be something about this matchup, and who knows what it is. But Aaron Rodgers was under assault all day, still had the better game for quarterbacks, but, you know, bad turnover by the running back, losing your top running back, like, those things probably made the difference. And then, as you said, just an absolute chicken shit moment from the head coach.
Like, an all-time one, when you are, like, field goal down...
Doesn't make any sense. We talked on the radio yesterday.
The field goal doesn't help you.
Exactly. And maybe, like, I struggle to even understand what you're thinking there. Because not only does the field goal not really help you, I mean, I guess it saves you a 2-point conversion, but honestly, if you score there, if somehow you got the ball back and scored, you'd still go for the 2-point conversion because you'd be giving the ball back to Tom Brady, right? Like, you could have tied this game and lost anyway, for sure. But you at least go for the tie, because the other thing is, even if you don't get it, you put them in worse field position than if you just kick it off. So there's...
Yeah, but I would maintain that field position is irrelevant, because you the if you give them the ball back, you've got to stop them three and out, regardless of where they are in the field, right? So
except
the field position almost doesn't matter, right?
Well, I'm just saying, like, no matter how far you dig, the field position matters only a little in that if you don't score and you do stop them, you're likely to get the ball back in a better place when you're out of timeouts with, like, 45 seconds left or whatever it is, right? So,
right.
You know, or a minute and a half. Like, you maybe you get it on your own 40 instead of your own 15. That does matter. Also, I think if you have them on their own five or so, it's harder for them to get certain – like, it limits their playbook in calling the three plays trying to get that game-winning first down. So I'm just saying that's not a major concern, but it's not like if you dig deeper, there's some incentive for kicking that field goal. It is arguably the most worthless 3 points in playoff history.
Yeah, I also don't know, just context to that game, like why they thought they would be getting the ball back with two minutes left. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
Tom Brady.
They weren't having, they stopped them all day. You know, they needed one first down to run out the game. So, of course, you go for it on fourth down. It's just one of those things that is completely inexplicable. And I don't, like, to me, it's, I know they had a great year, but that is borderline fireable. And I don't understand how all of these coaches have someone who's in charge of this situational stuff. And just about everybody's doing analytics. That, like, how are we still making these kinds of decisions?
Let's be serious here, right? How many different score combinations are there? If you spent 1 week of the offseason just going through all the potential end-of-game scenarios, you could have these questions answered in your head or even on paper ahead of time.
Yep.
Like, as a second-year head coach, there's just no excuse. Especially when, you know, you're supposed to be one of the young hotshot guys. Like, what is that decision? And we talked on the show yesterday about, like, could Aaron Rodgers have done something? Could he have been like, I'm staying out here? But, like, then you end up wasting the time out, which screws you no matter which decision you make. I just...
Right, it's true.
I don't know how anyone – like, it's the coach's decision, and once he makes it, I'm not sure there's anything anyone else can do unless there's somebody on the coaching staff designated with saying, hey, we talked about this, and actually that doesn't make any fucking sense, dude.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like the announcers can figure out when to go for two and when not to go for two either. And they've been playing, you know what I mean? So I don't know. Maybe this stuff is beyond people's comprehension, or maybe, like – we need to sit everyone in a room and just make them play Madden for like 2 weeks and maybe they'll come out with some idea. I don't know.
Ray Ratto said something about like, well, you know, he's so young and doesn't have the experience of other coaches. And it's like, I feel like you and I have the requisite experience to handle that decision properly. Because all you need to have done is watched football for the last 20 years while Tom Brady tore people's hearts out.
Yeah.
To know that you take every possible chance you have to not depend on stopping that guy to get back in this game. Period.
Yep. Sure do. And it's like, yeah, I don't know how we're screwing this up.
All that being said, it legit bothers me. All that being said, let me ask you an important question. If the Packers go for it on fourth down and they score and they tie the game with a 2-point conversion and there are 2 minutes and 5 seconds left and Tom Brady's Buccaneers have 3 timeouts, who wins that game?
Probably the Bucs. Yeah,
exactly. So in the end, as ugly as that play is, I still think what lost this game is the Packers offensive line, because when they forced 3 consecutive Tom Brady interceptions, the offense did basically nothing with it. And that was because of sacks and pressure that screwed things up. Otherwise, Aaron Rodgers was almost perfect all day long. Other than some pressure and some, you know, tough breaks from the referees, like, the Packers did this to themselves by not being able to block the Buccaneers' defensive line.
Yeah. Do you think being 1-4 in NFC title games is the thing people are going to remember about Aaron Rodgers?
Yes, but they shouldn't. I mean, again, like if you watch that game, you know Aaron Rodgers was by far the better quarterback in that game. And that's why judging quarterbacks by playoff wins or Super Bowl titles or wins at all is a fool's errand. Like, it can be a distinguishing factor down the line in a comparison, but to start there is stupid. Speaking of which, on the other side, where also two big chicken shit field goals got kicked, I'm actually, I'm less, I mean, even though those are terrible decisions, and I'll stand by that, I'm less upset or concerned with them just because I don't see how you're beating those guys.
Right.
No matter what decisions you make. I'm gonna pick against Tom Brady again in the Super Bowl, I'm pretty sure, which is probably fool's gold. But I just look at what the Chiefs can do and what Patrick Mahomes specifically can do to where no matter what you do as a defense, you could call the perfect defense, everyone could play it perfectly, and somehow he's going to escape and either hit Tyreek Hill streaking down the field or Travis Kelce wide open over the middle. The feeling of inevitability with the Chiefs' offense is like few things I have ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that you gotta kind of roll with that. And I think maybe the Chiefs rope-a-doped us a little bit. Like, I'm on that, you know, that idea that they were kind of pulling out just enough to win.
Yes,
all for your the life. Last few weeks of the season, you know.
But as someone keeps pointing out to me, the last time they lost a meaningful football game was a conference championship against the Patriots, where if Dee Ford doesn't jump off sides or the game is 5 minutes longer, they almost certainly win.
So you're saying that when they lost to the Raiders, it wasn't meaningful? I don't know that I believe that.
Really? What does it mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was like they hadn't locked up the division at that point. Like, that game counted for something.
Do you think they ever worried about the Raiders in the division? Did it really count for something? It was their only legitimate loss of the year. It's a fluky, weird loss it wasn't a great performance, but it's their only actual loss of the year. The other time they lost was when they basically forfeited.
How many games did they wind up winning home field advantage by?
I don't know, but they had it locked up going into week 17 because they rested everybody.
They did, right. But that's what I mean. That's why, to me, like, if you're, a game in week 5 or 6 against anybody, it's still a meaningful game. You know, like, yeah, they were the better team, and they probably weren't that worried about winning the division, but they're still going to win games.
They haven't lost a big game since the playoffs against New England when they were probably the better team. So, like, I just don't know.
Who was the quarterback that day when they were probably the better team? Look, I'm with you. I think Casey's going to win. But
yeah,
you can't call anything inevitable when Tom Brady's on the other damn side.
That's the problem. And I'm not saying – that's why I'm not saying it is inevitable. I'm saying when you watch the Chiefs, their offense just has a feel of inevitability, right? Like, how are you going to stop them? How?
Yeah. Some of that is, I'm also a little bit colored because my crappy team, like, went into Arrowhead and really beat them around all day and then somehow managed to lose anyway. I've seen them be stopped by a mediocre defense before.
But then also, as you said, just managed to have just enough to win in the end.
They managed to have just enough to win in the end, but a lot of that was because the Falcons missed a field goal at the gun. But you're right. It was just enough. And they did win the game. So fair play to them. I think that you got to favor Mahomes, right? Like, you're picking the Chiefs, aren't you?
I think I'm going to have to. I mean, there's a lot of time before I have to make a pick. But again, I just. The Buccaneers. I mean, here's the thing. The recipe is the same. What they just did to the Packers is how you beat the Kansas City Chiefs. It's just a lot harder to do.
Yep. And he's going to need more help from the defense to have those opportunities, or he's going to have to play insane, and we just haven't seen that many insane games from Brady this year.
Brady, I don't think Brady has four quarters of amazing football in him. I just don't. But if that defensive line can get off in the same way, I mean, they've sacked Aaron Rodgers. They're still sacking Aaron Rodgers right now.
Right, right.
And if they can get off in the same way against Tampa, that's how you beat them. That's how you beat them.
That is how you beat them. That is how you beat them.
All right, I'm sorry, against Kansas City.
And I'm not saying the Tampa Bay defense can't come out and be dominant, but that is not a dominant defense, right? Like,
no.
People scored on Tampa Bay plenty this year. So,
they're not dominant except on the defensive line against the Packers. But, you know, why not against the Buccaneers, whose line is not much better than the Packers, playing all teams besides Tampa? I keep saying that. Against the Chiefs. Like, is the Chiefs' offensive line, especially if Eric Fisher's out, is it significantly better than the Packers all year long? The only time you would say it was is when the Packers played the Bucs. Like, otherwise, the Packers line was pretty good. And so was the Chiefs, but they just lost their left tackle, potentially. I think he's out. And I just don't know, man. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
The one thing I would say is that you've got a more escapable quarterback too in this round, right? So,
yeah,
right. Sometimes you may get that pressure on Mahomes, and he could be 35 yards downfield.
Well, that's the thing. He looked, and even though I think you could still sort of see that his foot wasn't quite right, he just looks impossible to like get a hold of in a way that Aaron Rodgers probably hasn't been in a couple years.
Agreed. That's right. And you're right. He didn't look 100% right, but he looks right enough, and he's got 2 weeks to get better.
Yeah, that helps a lot. The two-week break is going to benefit him, too. And also, we know what Andy Reid does with 2 weeks to prepare. So, yeah, I'm going to favor the Chiefs. I'm probably going to pick the Chiefs. But, boy, I tell you, that Brady son of a gun is scary.
Yes. I would recommend if you are inclined to gamble, like, don't throw a lot of money at the score line of this game, right? Because you're going to want to pick the Chiefs, and then you're going to have a lot of money on against Tom Brady's going to lose.
Yep.
And, you know.
Like, it's a terrible place to be.
You've been alive for the last 20 years. I don't have to explain it.
Yeah. Sitting with your money against Brady is just an awful place to be.
You know what else is an awful place to be? Sitting on your couch watching Tom Brady win things.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's never great. Fun. Yeah. Never fun.
No, I mean, it's usually not exciting to root for the juggernaut either, but in this case, give me Kansas City all day.
Yeah. I think that's it. That's my rallying cry for the next 2 weeks is embrace the juggernaut.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with it.
Give me the overdog. I'll take the overdog. All right, should we do homework?
Yes.
Because we got stuff to watch. So there's a movie coming out, you know, one of those sort of same day premieres on HBO Max, called The Little Things. It's Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, Rami Malek. You've probably seen some ads for it.
Yeah.
We're gonna check that out. There's a show, it's on Amazon, right? Called Flack.
Yep. Amazon Prime, starring Anna Paquin. It's about a PR agency in England. Should be interesting. Getting good reviews.
Should be interesting. Anna Paquin's one of those people I always get confused with, like Evan Rachel Wood, and there's someone else that can never remember. Yeah, I don't know why that
all
is.
All white girls look the same.
No, just her and like two other ones. the second Euphoria special dropped over the weekend. That's out now, but we didn't get to check it out yet, so we're going to watch that.
The Jewels.
And then the Netflix show Lupin, which a lot of people have really been raving about.
Nice French pronunciation. It defaults to dubbed, but I'm going to go subtitles.
Yeah, I was actually just about to warn people that it's dubbed. So how does one get to the subtitles option?
You just go to, like, if you hit a button on Netflix, you know, and like the bar pops up, and then there's some options like audio and subtitle options that pop up there too. So like if you're on a Roku, you like press subtitles. Up. Well, you have to change that. Yeah, you have to go like way down the list past the subtitles to change the actual audio, and you can do like original French.
Yeah. Did you ever?
It's just too jarring for me to not hear the voice of the person who's actually talking.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And then when you know what I mean, it's the same feeling of watching sports with a fake crowd, right?
I find it much more
off-putting. Sometimes
you
don't notice. And then sometimes something happens where the reaction isn't quite right, and it's very jarring. Or off-putting is a good word for it.
Maybe.
Did you have you ever heard the story about how Ricky Rubio learned English?
No.
So he watched all of Friends 4 times. He
wow.
watched it. He watched it in Spanish, and then he watched it in Spanish, in English with Spanish subtitles, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And then he watched it in Spanish with English subtitles, and then he watched it all in English.
Interesting.
Yeah. That
what's
is a
funny
lot of
about that?
A lot of
well, first of all, it's a lot of Friends. Although, to be honest, I've probably seen every episode at least 4 times in my life. I do think it's funny, though, that that probably gave him a very interesting perspective on American culture at the same time as he was learning the language.
Yeah, sure did. I would imagine being in the NBA is also a pretty interesting perspective on American culture.
Yeah, well, I imagine he was a little confused by the culture within the NBA as compared to the culture within the television universe of Friends.
Could you imagine him going to practice like, could I be any more open?
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff. That is good stuff.
All right. On that note, we should probably go.
Was that all of it? Did we do all the homework?
That is all of it, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can now say we kind of did a short show.
Kind of? All right.
Yeah. We're like minute 47 or thereabouts right now, you know?
Yeah, kept it that's tight. Not too bad.
Nice and tight today.
I didn't jinx it, and we'll be back for the challenge on Thursday.
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.